Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And we're going to combine mind power with color power. My guest today, Susan Chemensky, is a woman that has dedicated her life to understanding many aspects, both in science as well as metaphysics, to see how the person like you and I could utilize it in everyday life. She's got quite an interesting back history that I think you'll find intriguing, because it laid the foundation for her to do the work that she's very committed and dedicated to doing at this time. I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Susan Chemensky, and we're going to be talking about the power of auras. This is a new book that has just come out. Susan, welcome to the show.
I'm so happy to be here with you today, Donna.
Now, Susan, I think my audience would be interested in knowing a little bit of your background, because you haven't just popped up with all these concepts, and my goodness, there's so much information that's out today about chakras and auras. Why did you decide you wanted to take this on? I mean, after all, there's all of these other publications on this. We're very, very open about it.
Yes, well, that's true, and I have written 10 books. I have 10 books in print. My publisher asked me to write a book about auras and also a book about chakras, and that's the reason why I ended up writing the books on chakras and on auras. And so I wrote the books, The Power of Auras and The Power of Chakras. And when I first was asked to write the book about auras, very strange things started to happen. Every person that came to me for counseling, suddenly I was seeing very strange things in their energy fields, strange anomalies. One person came to me, and she told me that she had been studying with a spiritual teacher. She called him Kriya, let's just say his name was Kriya. And what I noticed was when I tuned into her energy field, I could see a strange looking, it looked like a steel plate in front of her entire torso. And it was very bizarre. I didn't really understand why I would see such a strange thing. I had never seen anything like that before. So I called it a psychic plate. And I told her that it had been deposited into her energy field, or it had been installed into her energy field by this teacher, Kriya. And so I dissolved it, I healed it, and let it go. And then near the end of the session, she asked me, well, do you still think I should continue to study with Kriya? And so I said to her, well, if you don't ever want to be able to see the truth or have any subtle experiences, have clairvoyant sights, if you don't ever want to have clairaudient experiences of the divine voice, if you never want to be able to feel divine love, by all means, continue to study with Kriya. So in other words, there are people who have specific reasons in mind for controlling people and perhaps even depositing certain things into people's energy fields. And unfortunately, people are kind of gullible and rather clueless about these things. So not only was I seeing this psychic plate, in other people I was seeing things like psychic clamps, psychic nets, psychic jails, psychic ties, psychic tentacles, octopi, you know, all kinds of bizarre things in people's energy fields. And, of course, as I did that, I had to create specific ways to heal these things. So a lot of my book, The Power of Auras, is about how to heal the human energy field, how to cleanse it, how to keep it clear.
Now, I want my audience to know that you're not coming out of woo-woo left field, that you spent a good portion of your life studying yourself. And
exactly.
I liked your statement. You said you spent 22 years of meditation with your eyes closed. And you realized that that wasn't where you belonged, the ashram or the monastery type of life. And every one of us has to walk our own path. And depending on what culture you come from, this is something that you're either comfortable with or you're not. And in the Western culture, this is something that has evolved gradually, and people are more and more comfortable with it. In fact, you're really downright curious about it. And we are evolving an understanding of the fact that energy does have a frequency level, it has color, it has tones, and all of these wonderful levels of knowledge are available to us. And little by little, they are beginning to get incorporated into medicine. And not in the way that other cultures like the Eastern cultures and also, I would say, included in that, the Tibetan culture. In the Tibetan culture, this is something that was very much a part of training for lamas to help them understand how to work with people, especially the medical lamas. And we're slowly but surely getting there. And I think that it's important for people when they go to read the book, The Power of Auras, to pay attention to the background that you have, because that has laid a very solid foundation. Now, you addressed something a moment ago that I think is very much worthy of being attentive to, and that is you must be aware of the people that you associate with, and that there are those individuals that are manipulators, and that is a fact. I don't care whether they're associated with metaphysics or not. You have those people that really want to exert control, and your points are very significant. And many times people have been indoctrinated that they are supposed to, they've been dumbed down. Maybe I'll change my words. They have been dumbed down to think that they just couldn't possibly be aware of what these other people are aware of, which is a lie. What are some of the safeguards? Because when you get into the world of mind, there's a tremendous level of personal responsibility that comes with that. Otherwise, you're going to end up being a garbage can for everything in the universe, and that's not a good thing. What are some of the safeguards that you'd recommend, Susan?
I would completely agree with you, Donna. And let's just go back for a moment. You had asked me to tell a little bit about my background, so why don't I just start with that? I've been practicing spiritual disciplines for over 45 years. I spent 22 of those years in an ashram. Ashram is a place where you go to study with a spiritual master from India. I was in the ashram of Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the guru of the Beatles and of Deepak Chopra. And I was also on his personal staff for 7 of those years. And then I spent another 22 years studying New Thought and metaphysics, became a doctor of divinity. So I'm age 65 now, and the vast majority of my life, like I said, over 45 years, has been spent in spiritual study and in spiritual practices. And as I have traveled all over the world and taught spirituality to thousands of people, I've noticed that people get very entranced with spiritual leaders. They idolize them. They think they have some very fantastic ideas about gurus and so on. They think that if a person is a spiritually enlightened individual, that they must act a certain way and be a certain way and so on and so forth. And then they also have fantastic ideas that if a person has a certain title or claims to be a certain thing, that automatically is true. And unfortunately, there are people who may be even deluding themselves. There may be leaders and teachers who are, in fact, even delusional about their own abilities, who think that they are a lot more spiritually enlightened than they really are. And that's why it's very essential for people to learn spiritual discernment. Now, in two of my books, one is called Divine Revelation. By the way, I have 10 books in print. And in two of my books, one called Divine Revelation and the other one called How to Hear the Voice of God, I have a 10-test system for testing the authenticity of not only spiritual masters, but also testing the authenticity of your own inner guidance that you receive when you are receiving guidance or intuition from the still small voice within you, from your own higher self, how you can test that, how you can know that it's true. And my 10-test system is quite very effective, and people all over the world have learned it, and it's a very easy way to know whether you're truly in contact with the divine presence or with some other person or some other voice, because like I often say, all that glitters is not necessarily God. All that glitters is not God.
Now, Susan, in your book, which is quite comprehensive, and people will find that there are details in here that they've read about before, but I really like your exercises that you have in here, because there are exercises that enable you to, with your eyes, to be able to see energy around things. And sometimes it's just very, very soft, very, very soft. And it's really a skill to learn the variations, the tones of colors, to understand their applications, especially with a person, and to be able to do it in an environment where you're going to be able to really see them clearly. But I liked the one simple exercise that you have in your book called the subtle energy, and it's called buffing up. And was this something that you were taught when you were in the ashram to understand the energy aspect? This is a fun exercise.
It really is. Yeah, I was not taught that in the ashram, but I was taught that by dowsers, actually. Dowsers are very, very well-educated, very, very astute people who are studying the human energy field and know how to work with it and how to measure it and so forth. So buffing up is an exercise in which you clench both of your fists and you place them right next to each other, and then you vigorously rub your fists against each other for about 45 seconds in like a buffing or washboard motion. So you've got your fingers and fists and you're rubbing like a washboard. You're rubbing your fists against each other. Let's say the heel of your hands are facing each other and your fingers are facing each other in these fists, and then you rub in this washboard motion, and then as you unclench your fists and you face your palms towards each other, if you put them a few inches apart, you're going to slowly move your palms in and out, and you will feel like an invisible ball of energy between your palms. You might sense some pressure, some prickling, some thickness, some warmth, some cooling, something like that. And this is just a way for you to notice that there is subtle energy. And subtle energy is called prana. And in Sanskrit, they call it prana. And in China, they call it qi. And in Japan, they call it ki.
I think this is just international. It really is. This is something that if you talk to the Aboriginal people in Australia, they'll talk about these energies. It's something that really, when someone is aware, it is not something that's going to be uncomfortable. It's not going to be something that is literally woo-woo. And what I often will tell people, when you go in for an MRI, and they're getting all these color codes, that's exactly what they're doing. They're getting an auric reading where they are utilizing colors to give them information about what is going on in the body. And people often say, oh, I'd never thought of it that way. I said, it's the same thing. We're finally becoming sophisticated enough. And there may be a day where when you go in for a physical exam, you'll stand in front of a screen or someone will just scan you like the little handheld thing that was featured on Star Trek for so many generations, and you will be read out, and they'll say, this is going on, this is not going on, because these energy emanations out of the body will often give details of a potential disorder or health issue long before it physically materializes. And what a wonderful advantage that would be in medicine if the auras were read, if those energy levels could be read, and a physician could say, you have this that's beginning to find a very comfortable environment to blossom in. Now, if you don't want this to happen, let's take these preventative measures. Wouldn't that be cool?
It's already here, Donna. It began with a man named Simon Davidovich Kurlian, who lived from 1900 to 1980, and he was a technician in southern Russia near the Black Sea. And he was an electrotherapy treatment specialist, and he was noticing a tiny light flash that happened between his instrument's electrodes and the patient's skin. And as a result of that, he discovered that he could photograph the light emissions of organisms in a field of high-frequency electrical currents. And this is he's the one that invented Kurlian photography, which I'm sure you've mm-hmm. heard of. And he was able to photograph tree leaves, and he was able to photograph his own hand, and began to photograph the energy field around living beings, living organisms. And by deciphering the photographs, he could accurately diagnose diseases long before the symptoms actually appeared. And then the Soviet scientists who continued research found, discovered bioluminosity. They called it the biofield. And right now, today, there's an amazing scientist. His name is Konstantin Korotkov. He was born in 1952, and he works at St. Petersburg State Technical University in Russia. And he developed something called a GDV, gas discharge visualization device. And his system is called electrophotonics. And he's able to create stunning real-time photos and videos of humans, of various organisms, of water, of gemstones. And this GDV device, which is a small device, it looks like it's about the size of a cell phone or something.
Mm-hmm.
It takes photographs of the energy field, and it reports potential health abnormalities prior to any symptoms. It also not only diagnoses, it also gives you remedies. And this particular device is being used today in Russia and in Europe.
Interesting. Where in Europe?
And I don't know exactly where, but Korotkov, he claims that Kurlian photography is like a bicycle, but his GDV camera is like a Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more sophisticated than Kurlian photography. So
oh,
this
no
is
question.
Being used right now. You can do an internet search on the GDV and on Korotkov, and you'll find out about it.
How do you spell his last name?
K-O-R-O-T-K-O-V, Korotkov.
Well, that is really interesting information, because I definitely will look up on that. Well, let's check out the colors, because there are an infinite array of color tones. And in your book, you go into colors, their meaning, and what the positives and the negatives. And this is so significant. And I know one of my favorite stories is about the color orange. And I knew a woman many years ago who had suddenly bought all of this furniture that was in this bright orange. Now, we're not talking about a golden warm orange. We're talking about a bright orange. And I will never forget having walked into her house, and here's this furniture, and my eyes got as big as saucers. And I thought, what in the world is this woman doing with this. And I just started into my work in the study of mind, and I thought, something's wrong here. Well, later on, I found out that this woman was addicted to Valium, that she was taking it all the time, and she was going through this very unhealthy patterning where her emotions were just going up and down because of the addiction. And the orange was such a stimulus. There was so much of this furniture that was just this intense orange that it really contributed to the problem. But she was attracted to it because of what she was going through. I don't think she stayed with it. But when I found out what I did, I went, color is so important in our environment. There's those tones that are soothing. You have the pink rooms that they use in prisons to sedate really agitated people, and there's other color tones that can be used. There are tones, you know, like blue, certain blue tones you don't ever want to have in a doctor's office. You're just going to sit there and freeze, and I know that because I went through that experience myself. A doctor decided he was going to use color in his examination rooms, and by golly, the color blue that he used, I felt like I was in a deep freeze. I could hardly wait to get out of there, and the walls and the ceilings were painted with it. It was terrible. It was hideous. And then another doctor many years later that I went to, he had painted his examination room this lovely yellow. So you're in the room, and you just felt good. It just was really very, very positive. And this is something you bring out in your book, and I really like some of the descriptions you give with the colors. What has been the most profound experience that you have had with color?
Well, what I've noticed is simply that colors have a very powerful effect, and I personally use color in an interesting way. That is, I try to utilize a wide variety of colors, try to use the entire spectrum of colors, not only in my wardrobe, but also in my environment and in my food, for example. And I find that if you balance your life with color using like a rainbow of colors rather than just sticking to one color over and over and over again, you're going to have a more balanced life. So would you like me to talk a little bit about what the different colors mean in the energy field?
Yes, let's do that.
Or how the different colors can affect us?
Yes, because there are some books, there's not a heck of a lot on the use of color, unless you get into interior design. And that's really big, because the people that do designs of homes and the interior decorating, I mean, you can walk into a place, it's amazing. This is really fun, I think. What do you feel when you walk into someone's home? You know, what is it that happens there? Are you comfortable? Do you, what is it? It's the same with going into a store. And so designers are very aware of this. But yeah, let's share some of this information.
Right. So first of all, I'll talk a little bit about what the colors mean in the human energy field when you're able to see certain colors in what we call the mental body, which is part of your human energy field, part of your aura. And I talk about this in my book, The Power of Auras. And the color red, for example, is a color of life force energy. It's the color of prana, of chi, of ki. So it means activity. It means that there is a lot of physical energy within that person's energy field. You'll often see the color red. And as I'm talking about the colors, please note that I'm talking about vibrant, clear colors. If the colors are muddy, then there's a problem, a physical or emotional problem. If the colors are bright and vibrant, then there's no problem physically or emotionally. It's just that the colors mean certain things. So the red color just indicates physical activity. It might be in an athlete. It might be in children. Children often have a lot of red in their energy field. It just means that there's a lot of pranic energy or life force energy. The color blue is a color of spirituality. A person with blue in their energy field will often be very spiritual or religious. They will have a certain conviction. They'll be working for a cause or they'll believe in a cause. Maybe they're practicing meditation. Maybe they're practicing prayer and so on. So blue indicates spirituality. The color yellow is the color of the mind. It indicates intellectual activity. So if you're studying, if you're going to school, if you're actually up in front of a group giving a lecture and so on, you may have quite a bit of yellow in your energy field. The color orange is more of a social color. It's a color of optimism. It's a color of courage. It often means that you're like a social butterfly, that you're very extroverted. A salesman, somebody who is a people person may have orange in their energy field. A green color would be somebody who is either a healer or on a healing path. A green is the most balanced color. It's the color of nature. It's the most soothing color out there because it is the color of grass and leaves and basically the color of nature, the color that gives us oxygen, actually. So green is a very healthy color, and people who are in the medical field or who are healers may often have green in their energy field. The color violet often means that you're a very psychic or sensitive individual. You may be clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient. You may have quite a bit of spiritual prowess or spiritual abilities. So these are just touches on what the different energies mean. One other one I just might mention is white. If you have a bright white energy field, if there's a lot of bright, clear white in your energy field, often you have attained quite a bit of spiritual mastery. You might be a spiritual master. So these are some of the colors. If you see black or dark streaks or gray or muddy colors in the energy field, it often means that you're either ill in that area of the energy field. There might be an illness, there might be an injury, or you might have some kind of psychological problem or even an addiction. So these muddy and dark colors or dull colors indicate that something is amiss.
Susan, your book has a great deal of information, and whether someone is just starting out wanting to learn more about this, or if you have done a lot of study and you want to learn more, she has some wonderful information on how to make water with the use of color be very healthy. And there's just so many things like how to generate an energy within yourself using energetic movement and the brain gym, which I'm familiar with and having to work with that, kinesiology, exercises that you can do for yourself, and there's a lot more. And both of her books, The Power of Chakras and The Power of Auras, I think are good books to have in a library because it's something that educates you and makes you aware of your own potentiality. That's right. It makes you aware that there's more to you than you could have imagined. Now, Susan, you can find out more about her work and what she has done. Just go to her website, Dr. Susan, and that's drsusan.org. drsusan.org. Susan Szymanski, thank you so very much for being my guest today. It has been a delight.
It's been a great pleasure, Donna. Thank you for inviting me.
It's been a joy. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break for just a moment. Don't go away. We've got some other good things to share. We're going to be right back.
If you are an author and would like to be a guest on the Donna Sebo Show, please send a review copy of your publication along with a press release to the Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington 98497. Allow 6 to 8 weeks for your material to be reviewed. Again, the address to send your material to is The Donna Sebo Show, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, so if you'd like to give me a buzz, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Hey, I'm here to do that. All you have to do is give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And all I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, is your first name or an initial. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling from. And then after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive, and then anything that may be of particular interest to you that you'd like some insight on, give me a call at 888-627-6008. Well, here in the Pacific Northwest, we have not had snow, but oh, it's so beautiful outside. It's gone down into the 20s, so yes, it's a woo-hoo, a little bit cool out there. You better put on your long johns if you're going to go out and doing any power walking, which is something I always enjoy. But the reality is, it is just absolutely gorgeous, because when you are up early in the morning, as I am, then you have this wonderful white frost. It's ice. It's all of these icicles. And the lights on the streets illuminate this wonderful, wonderful crystal-like environment. And it just has this soothing, comfortable, cozy feel. And you're so grateful to be inside where it's warm. I always, when we start evolving into this time of the year, I always have this great appreciation for the pioneers that came through areas like the Pacific Northwest, Alaska, areas of Canada, those hardy souls, many of them walking, that managed to survive without the conveniences that we have today. When I've talked to old-timers, it's just been amazing to me how they lived in tents. They kept warm. And they really didn't moan and groan about their lives at all. They just said, this is the way it is. We'll deal with it. And here we are today, living in a world that has so many conveniences that enables us to stay warm and cozy, watch nature as she does her different dances of seasons. And it's a fascinating phenomenon. I really think one of the gifts of history is to make you aware of what people have gone through in the past. And that's one of the things many times on the show that I thoroughly enjoy sharing with you. Speaking of history, we're going to dip back to the World War II period. I was sent this by one of the readers of my newsletter. Her name is Betty. And she said, this is something I came across that I thought you might enjoy using on your show. It came from a book, Donna, The Fall of Fortresses. The writer of the book is Elmer Bendiners. And this is the excerpt. It starts off with one sentence. Sometimes it's not really just luck. Elmer, the author of the book, was a navigator in a B-17 during World War II. In his book, he tells the story of a World War II bombing that went over Kassel, Germany, and an unexpected result of a direct hit on their gas tank. And this is what he said. Our B-17, the Tondaleo, was barraged by flak from Nazi anti-aircraft guns. That was not unusual, but on this particular occasion, our gas tanks were hit. Later, as I reflected on the miracle of a 20-millimeter shell piercing the fuel tank without touching off an explosion, our pilot, Von Fox, told me it was not quite that simple. On the morning following the raid, Von got down to ask our crew chief for the shell, because the shell survived, and they thought it was a lucky shell. The crew chief told Von that not just one shell had hit their plane, but 11 shells were found in their gas tanks. 11 unexploded shells, where only one was sufficient to blast us out of the sky. It was a miracle. It was as if the sea had been parted for us. I can't believe it. A near miracle, he thought. Even after 45 years,
this awesome event leaves him shaken. But there's more to the story. He said he really realized what a miracle it was after he heard the rest of the story from Bone. This is what he was told. The shells had been sent to the armorers to be diffused. The armorers told him that intelligence had picked up the shells. They couldn't say why, but Vaughn eventually sought out the answer. This is what they found. When the armorers opened each one of the shells, now remember, there was 12 that had not gone off. Inside every one of those shells, there was not an explosive charge. They were clean as a whistle, totally harmless, empty. Bone said, "You got to be kidding. All of them were empty?" They said, "No, one was not. One of the shells contained a very carefully rolled up piece of paper. On it was something scrawled in Czech. The intelligence people scoured all over trying to find someone that could read this message in this rolled up piece of paper that had been in one empty bomb. Finally, they found somebody. And this is what the note said. This is all we can do for you now. Using Jewish slave labor is never a good idea. The Germans had no idea that the people that they were brutalizing were making sure there was nothing in those shells to do harm. A true story, and I want to thank Betty for sending it to me. Pearl Harbor Day is day after tomorrow. So many things that go on in life we don't know anything about. This is one of those stories. Stories like this, of the courage of human beings daring to go against their oppressors. They couldn't do a lot. They couldn't be out there. They were prisoners. They couldn't fight back. They were starving to death. But they could, in their own way, make sure that the shells could do no harm. It is true. You can get his book, The Fall of Fortresses, Human Ingenuity. Very, very clever. By the way, tomorrow we're going to be talking with a World War II veteran. We are going to be talking about Ken Potty, and there's two books that are about this man, codenamed Sonny, and then Mountains of Fire. These are stories about people and what they do in life in extenuating circumstances. And someone might say, why bother with the past? It's gone. The past has a lot to teach us. We can learn from those that have gone before us, but only if we're open to learning. Anytime we get so arrogant that we think that there's nothing else that we possibly can learn from anyone, we're in trouble, because there's always a better way of doing something. But sometimes those people that have gone before us have already taken care of certain particulars, and we don't need to go out there and reinvent the wheel because it's already been done. It's what can you do with the wheel differently, effectively, more efficiently, and in a better way to serve life that makes a difference. So that's why education is so important. That's why it's very important for us to make friends with books, be a part of different environments that allow us to see different perspectives of thinking. It is vitally important for us to do this. Sometimes I think one of the greatest gifts we can ever be given is to be part of a debating group. I can remember when that happened to me, and I was in high school, and there was a coach that was teaching a class, and he said, okay, what side do you want to be on? And he gave certain topics. And by golly, he said, okay, what side do you want to take? The students would say what they wanted. And he said, okay, you're going to get exactly the opposite. And they said, well, I don't believe that. He said, well, then you're going to have to look at the other side. And what it did, it introduced me at a very young age to the fact that you can learn how to deal with different sides, but you have to do some homework. You have to do some research. And I was put into that positioning. And I remember what a thrill it was to be able to take a stance and to be in a different environment of thought. And through the years, I have learned so much. But one of the greatest lessons I've learned is sometimes what's considered to be absolutely correct may not be. It may not prove to be that way at all. And it's really interesting to me how so often we're indoctrinated to have things as black and white, and they aren't. You're going to find life is a rainbow. It is not just, again, black or white. Donna Sebo here. We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes, and if you should want to give me a call, 888-627-6008. That phone line is open to you. I wanted to share a recipe for a potato soup with you because this is a season. I am really someone that loves soups. And the reason I like them is that I usually can throw everything into a crock pot and just let it simmer. And it just makes the house smell so delicious. And, you know, freshly baked bread, a little salad if you want it. But it's just, when it's as cold as this is, it's just soup just fits everything. Potato soup was a favorite in my family when we were growing up. And my grandmother had a particular recipe that my mother used all the time. I don't know what happened to the recipe book because I don't have it. But boy, was it good. And it was perfect during the winter months. This recipe, I think, is going to be so easy to do. And it is delicious. It's made with leeks. Cheddar cheese, use the extra sharp, yum, and, of course, potatoes. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 1/4 cup of unsalted butter, 2 leeks. You want to use the white and the light green parts only, and you want to make sure they're washed well so all the grit's out of the leeks, and then you want to chop it up real finely. You're going to need 4 large russet potatoes. It's going to be about 3 pounds. You want to peel them. I don't like to peel them. I know the recipe says peel them. I keep the peel on. Dice them up, little half-inch dice-size potatoes. You're going to need 4 cups of chicken broth. And if you don't want to use chicken broth, use beef. Use a vegetable. You know, it's your kitchen. You do what you want to do. 2 cups of finely shredded sharp cheese. I like the extra sharp. 1 cup of milk. And then 6 scallions. You want to chop those up finely, green and all. And then you want 8 slices of cooked bacon, and you want it crumbled. So if you don't want any meat in this, leave out the bacon. And then, of course, people can salt and pepper to their own desire. And what's going to be adding a little bit of extra oomph to this is some sour cream. We're going to take a break for a moment. I'll tell you how to make everything up and have a fabulous meal for yourself and your family. Believe me, they are going to love it. This is Donna Sebo. We're coming back in just a moment.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural, and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you want to chat. 888-627-6008. Okay, I gave you the ingredients for the potato soup. That's butter, and not a whole bunch. And if you don't want to put butter in it, you don't have to. You really don't. But anyway, butter, leeks, potatoes, broth, extra sharp cheddar cheese, my bias on that level, milk, scallions, a little bit of bacon. Sound good? Well, let's put it all together. You're also going to be adding a cup of sour cream. That's right. Didn't want to miss that. Now, with the butter, the reason that you may want to use the butter, but you don't have to. If you don't want the butter in there, you don't have to have it. But it does add a richness to the soup. And over medium-high heat, you're going to put in those chopped up, those finely chopped leeks, and they're going to soften up real fast in like 2 to 3 minutes. And you want to put this in a pot that's going to slow cook on the top of the stove, or my beloved crock pot. Yes, yes, yes. Crock pots during this time of the year are godsends. They're absolutely wonderful. But you're going to need about a 5 to 7 quart cooker for this because of the amounts. You're going to add your potatoes, your broth, and you're going to cook it on high for about 3 hours or on low for 5 to 6 hours. And then what you want to do after it's been processed like this, you want to then put it in a blender. That's right. Now, I don't think you have to do the blender if you don't want to. I'm biased with this because I like the chunks of potatoes. But some people like a smoother soup. So if you want a smoother soup, then what you can do is put it in the blender, but it needs to be cooled a little bit. You put small amounts in and you puree your soup. Or if you're one of those people that has the blender that is handheld, where you can puree your soup right in the crock pot, hey, you have got a winning appliance right there. Now, everything goes back into the slow cooker. You add your cheese, your milk, your scallions, and your bacon, and you let it simmer in the slow cooker for about an hour. And your sour cream is a choice of whoever is eating it, if they want to add it or not. You can use light sour cream, but it is the flavors that, along with the ingredients, the cheeses, the onions, the potatoes, it is absolutely marvelous. And boy, does it smell good. And I would say if you didn't want to use the blender, if you want more of a chunky soup, and just take a masher then. A potato masher, and just go in and just stir it up. But I know when I was growing up, I loved the chunky potatoes. I really did. And I still do to this day. It is a delightful, delightful meal that is going to really be something your family is going to want to enjoy over and over again. And it's easy. I mean, really, it is easy. Miracles, I believe in them. A miracle is something that often is not expected. Many times, circumstances happen that we can't explain. But what if you were a woman that had a rare birth defect and you wanted children? Mm-hmm. The odds of your passing along that defect are quite high. But I really think that sometimes life has a way of presenting us with special gifts that we don't expect. And that's what happened with a woman by the name of Sarah Kovach. Now, Sarah was born with a disease that's called AMC. And its name is like 45 miles long, medical term. But it basically means that her joints are crooked. bend. Her shoulders are always going to be sloped. They don't have the muscle to keep them straight. Hands, well, they're all shriveled up. They turn inward. I've got a picture of her in front of me. Beautiful woman. Just beautiful woman. And her fingers are too short. Now, why this happened to her, nobody has any idea. Parents didn't have anything like this. Something mutated in the genetic package that she inherited, and that's the way it was. But you know what? Her parents loved her so much. They taught her one thing. They said, you are not disabled. You have a disability, but you're not disabled. And she was able to dress herself. They were able to show her, and she figured out ways herself to get along, doing the way she needs, doing whatever she needs to do. She learned how to use her feet, because her feet were totally normal. So her hands weren't, her feet were. Amazing what she is able to do. She even could blow dry her hair with her, using her feet with a blow dryer. Can you imagine doing that? I can't. I mean, that's just beyond me. But she did it. Well, she didn't think she was ever going to have anybody come into her life. It was going to be Mr. Wonderful. However, there was this fellow. His name is Adam. And he didn't care. He honestly didn't care about the fact that she wasn't like other people physically. And they got together. They went together for about a year, and he popped the big question. Well, she was very much in love with him, and he with her, and so guess what? Yes, they got married. And Sarah said, I just couldn't imagine anything getting any better than this. Well, Adam wanted a family. She was concerned. Because she wondered, can I take care of a baby? Well, when she found that she got pregnant, and she really hadn't planned on it, she was scared to death. There were a lot of things that were really concerning her. Now, her parents were a little bit concerned because of many variables. One, gee whiz, what if your children are born with the same kind of birth defect that you've got? And about her being able to take care of her, you know, of a child. Well, by golly, Sarah and Adam were figuring things out. And when her baby boy, Ethan, was born, she was just thrilled. She was absolutely thrilled. And she said, one of the things I had to learn how to do was to trust myself because her arms wouldn't work. You know what she started to do, though? She started to use her feet. Mm-hmm. When her little boy got old enough where he was talking, Ethan, he didn't care. His mom loved him. She took good care of him, as did his dad. And one day, Ethan was playing with his mom, and he was playing with her fingers, and he was trying to get her fingers to flex like his. And out of this baby's mouth comes the words, no working, needs batteries. Well, she just laughed, and her son didn't care. And she said, I love you, and he said, no matter what. She said, there's a lot of things that she can't do. But she said, one of the things by having her children that she learned is that we all battle fear. We all wonder if we are enough. We just need to have faith in ourselves. And on that note, I'm going to say goodbye. Won't you join me tomorrow? I would love to have you at my broadcasting table. Tell your friends. And remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Enjoy your beautiful day or evening wherever you are on this fabulous planet of ours. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.